I had made a promise I didn't really come through on, and that was that I would have a PowerPoint presentation that had my granddaughter on every image. So because I don't have that, though, you'll have to check in with Ruthie. Once again, she is somewhere in the back there with our dog, Cooper, so you can also enjoy Cooper at the same time as seeing the latest photos of Elliot, which I know you long to see. So one of the things that I just really enjoy about August and coming here is that Pastor Josh gives me the freedom to just share with you what God has been doing in my life for the past year. So it's not like, okay, here's what I want you to do, here's the thing that I want you to play into, the subject I want you to speak to, but rather just says, what God has been doing in your life, what your own study, your own development has produced, would you just come and share that with us? And so it's kind of a delightful thing to me to hit August and then to have you be the first ones that I kind of unload things on, the things that have been perking inside of me and developing in me. The downside of that is that I usually come with, and always do, and again today, with far more than I can ever tell you in 4 weeks. And so I give you pieces of it. You're just kind of getting samplings of it. And that's what we've been doing for the last 3 weeks. And so today I want to kind of bring some things together. It's not going to be as focused, perhaps, but it's a desire to try and collect some of these things that we have been talking about concerning hope. I once read that someone can live 40 days without food. That you can survive for 3 days without water. That you can live for 8 minutes without air. But you can survive for only about 1 second without hope. Now you can dispute those numbers all you want, and they're pretty easy to challenge. But the point is made with that set of numbers there, that hope is essential to our very existence. And it is. Once someone gives up hope, life is over for them. Anyone. But for us, as those who have given our lives to Jesus and have placed our hope on Him, hope is a central feature. We began our first week by looking at 1 Corinthians 13, and we all kind of get love out of that thing. As I mentioned it, kind of that's the big highlight that comes to mind. But as Paul writes about this, he launches this with that interaction about love with this statement. He says, "Now abide faith, hope, and love. These three." In other words, those are the essentials. Those are core features of our walk with Christ, core features of our redemption. These three, he says, are the foundation pieces of that. And we get that to some degree. We get the idea of faith. I mean, that's bedrock to us, and we talk about that a lot. We get the love part. We talk about that a lot, but what has been a concern to me and what launched me on this whole thing myself was this idea that hope seems to be almost like a little hyphen in that statement. It's like the other two are in bold black and white, and this is kind of in gray in the middle there. And yet as I probed into the scriptures, I found that hope is to be one of those essential features of who we are, a hallmark, something that is distinguishable, observable as people look at our lives, that they see hope there. Not simply a wishful thinking, not some kind of little abstractness here, but something that is very, very real. I tossed out to you the very first week and have revisited each week the idea of a possible definition for it, and that hope is faith that actively anticipates the future. Faith that actively anticipates the future. Paul wrote to the Ephesian believers and said, before coming to know Christ, you had no hope. I mean, realistically, you had no hope. And you're without Christ in this world. Peter, in his first letter, wrote to those who were going through a lot of rough times in their life and were being challenged at every point. And he wrote to them and encouraged them to be ready to give a reason for the hope that was in them. Not for all your doctrine, not for your theology and all that, but rather to give a reason for the hope that is in you. And by making that statement, I believe that part of it includes the idea that your hope is to be visible, is to be something that people ask you about. Why do you have this hope? Where does this come from? How can you be this kind of person and have this in your life? Hope. And with that in mind, that's where I kind of like to take us a bit today is what does hope look like in a life? I mean, what should people see when they look at our lives, those who have given our life to Jesus, those who have placed our hopes on Him? What should that life look like? And so let me give you three characteristics that I believe are true. That hope manifests itself this way in our lives. Three simple words. Through joy, confidence, and longing. Joy, confidence, and longing. Now those should sound kind of appealing to us even. I mean, as we hear those, we go, yeah, I kind of like that. You know, maybe not the last one as much, but at least the first two I could kind of go for. Joy, confidence, and longing. So take a look at these words. First one, the idea of joy. That hope changes my emotional response to life. Particularly as we've kind of defined it over these past few weeks here. Hope is something that changes my emotional response to life. In the book of Romans, Romans 12, verse 12, there's kind of a list of things that are to be markers of our life. And one of those is not just the idea of hope being there, but it's pitched this way, rejoicing in hope. And you see what there's an emotional charge to it. It's not that it's just that you have hope, but rejoicing in this, that there is to be an emotional charge to it. If you look through the scriptures, a whole bunch of statements that sound just like this one. I pulled this one out of it. A rejoicing, an emotional response to life that is different from those around us. Different from those who don't have this hope that we have been given. By mentioning this joy, I'm not talking about something that's kind of a shallow, Pollyanna kind of view of life. We tried to make a point of that last week. The hope that we have doesn't minimize life as we experience it. It doesn't somehow take the difficult things in life, the unfair things in life, the injustices, the drama and trauma and all that stuff, and somehow say, it's all fine. Because if you're in the midst of that, you're saying, it's not all fine. It hurts, right? It confuses and twists us and cranks us around. Life does that. And if you're in one of those spaces right now when that's not happening, enjoy it. Because it doesn't last long. I mean, it's just that's the reality of life. It happens. And the hope that we have doesn't minimize that or remove it. It doesn't somehow trivialize it. It recognizes, yes, this is a reality. It just is. But our hope brings in alongside it another story. A bigger story. One that allows us to see things in a different perspective. A reality that has a whole new narrative to it. And it also is true. And the difference of going through a situation is which story, which narrative you're going to play off of. And if you play off of just your experience here, it's devastating. And you can try and shore yourself up and, I'm going to make it through this thing. Or as those who have placed our hope in Jesus and have chosen to, we place ourselves into the other narrative. We play to that narrative, which doesn't take this one away. But it changes everything. When you're able to take your story and put it inside this larger story and allow that to be what's defining your experience in the present. When Paul writes, rejoicing in hope, it's worth to take a few moments and just think about this word rejoicing. Because it's not simply a command to be joyful. When the scriptures talk about rejoicing in something, it's not just, okay, come on, perk up, come on, be joyful, you know. You try and command your emotions to do that. You know, you're in the midst of something, and I'm going to be joyful. And you know how well that works, right? It doesn't. Now, maybe it does. I mean, if you kind of, you can do some weird things in your head and maybe make it work. But that's not the idea. When the scriptures talk about rejoicing, it's an active choice. It's a decision inside yourself to place your mind on what brings you joy. So, I mean, you can kind of move that into any area of life. Whatever brings you joy, if you choose to put your mind there, that it automatically shifts things. That's where your joy comes from. So, like for us, one of those, see, I had to bring this in, is Eliette, our granddaughter. So all I have to do is think of one of the images of her, which now would have been a great time to go click and have us all see a picture of her. But that brings joy, I mean, because I put my mind there. And that's the idea. Now, from a biblical standpoint, from what we're coming from in our, as those who have found redemption in Jesus, the idea is to put your joy, you know, if you put your mind on the person of Jesus and what he has brought to us and what he holds for us, to put your mind there is that which brings joy. Now, we'll talk more about that in a moment, but it's that idea that it's not commanding your emotions to suddenly kind of jump up. But it's putting your mind on what brings you joy, therefore it kicks in. One of the things that that I've been doing over the past, well, particularly intentionally the past week, but Ruthie and I do this all the time, is asking people, what are you looking forward to? That's an interesting question. You know, to ask, you know, what are you looking forward to? Not in the big terms like, you know, where your life is going and spiritual things and all that, but just, what are you looking forward to? Now, if I was to ask you that this morning, you know, don't respond. In your mind, you will, though. What are you looking forward to? It's interesting when I ask that question, because the answers fall usually into one of two big boxes. Over on one side, if I ask, you know, what are you looking forward to, you'll see this kind of, I have no idea what you're asking. Look on the face. Looking forward to. Gosh, I don't know. Haven't thought about that. You know, that kind of response. Or, I mean, it's still in this box here. I asked, Ruth and I were at a wedding event yesterday, and turned out I was sitting next to this woman that's, you know, probably in her mid-50s, and she kind of came across as a woman where life is more something to be endured, you know, than enjoyed. You know, that kind of person, you know. So that makes the conversation a little hard, because I'm not sure where to go with this here, because this kind of that Eeyore kind of approach to life, you know, like, that kind of look, you know. So I asked her the question. So what are you looking forward to? And I had to try, you know, several shots, you know. Okay, what are you looking for? You know, like what I mean, like out there that kind of is, you know. And finally she said, well, I guess I'm looking forward to the day that I don't have to work anymore. I'm thinking, that's kind of a negative hope, you know. Not like it doesn't pull you forward at all. It's more like, okay, I know I have to fill in the blank. So what is it? Okay, here it is. Here's an answer. Is that good? But nothing that lit this person up. It was more like, I just can't wait for it to end, whatever it is. Now, on the other hand, you can ask people the question and you get a different response. You ask them, what are you looking forward to? And it's like they flip a switch inside, you know? And it's like, What am I looking? Oh, there's this trip that's coming up. You know, it's like 3 weeks away, and I can't wait to go. You know, and boom, you know, the whole demeanor changes. You know, the sound of the voice changes. Everything changes because they're there. What are you looking forward to? Oh, well, I'm getting a new puppy next week. Whatever it is, you know, that somehow something kicks in where you're looking forward to. My husband's returning from Iraq. You know, there's something going on there that lights that person up. And what's interesting is if you kind of are able to kind of, you know, freeze the moment and step back and look at it to analyze what's going on here, that person at that moment that they thought of what they were looking forward to steps out of life as it is. No, it's not, the reality is still here, but for a moment, everything changes as they think about what they're looking forward to. And the emotional response shifts there. And there's something about that whole thing. We're wired this way. That as we think in terms of what we're looking forward to, which is kind of, that's that whole hope thing, faith that actively anticipates the future, a positive future. As we do that, it shifts our response to life. And God is calling us continually as an act, a spiritual discipline, a practice of ours, to constantly put our minds toward what is coming, toward what He has for us, what we look forward to. One of the marks that is to separate us is joy. Another mark is confidence. And that one also needs to be played with a little bit because it's not simply confidence in myself. You know, that self-confidence. That, you know, and confidence is a great thing in life. I mean, I think it's one of those wonderful characteristics of anyone where there's, you know, they feel confident and they kind of come across confident. And there's, I enjoy being around people who have not arrogance. Not self-centeredness, not, you know, none of that kind of stuff, but someone who's just confident. But part of the shift here that hope brings is, hope is, again, there's a reality piece in it. We've talked about this. That the confidence doesn't come from me. It's the reality that I am not enough. And that I've encountered that. And I'm not trying to pretend that I'm enough. I'm not still trying to be enough in life. But I've realized I'm not enough. I'm not enough for my own expectations, much less anybody else's. And having encountered that, I have found in the person of Jesus someplace else to go with that. That He is enough. And I move that whole center of things somewhere else. And the confidence in Him versus in me. There's a confidence that comes there that grounds my life in a person and in this larger narrative. Hebrews 6, verse 19, says this, this hope we have as an anchor for our soul, a hope both sure and steadfast and one that enters within the veil. There's this idea that there's a stability in life that comes with this. That I've anchored my soul somewhere in a person and in a promise. In fact, you back this thing up, which we'll do in a moment here. But it's built around this unchangeableness of our God in His purpose and in His promise. And we anchor ourselves right there in Him and in what He has done and what He has promised to us. And there's a stability that comes there, a confidence in life because it doesn't depend on me anymore. My hope, as far as in this confidence realm, is not that God will do what I want Him to do. It's not a confidence that comes with, okay, I know that God's going to show up in this. That's our terminology often. Or God's going to show up in this thing and everything's going to change. Now, that's often kind of our deal. I have hope that somehow He is going to change the dynamics of it. It's not a hope that God will somehow fulfill my dreams, my hopes, whatever. But rather it's a hope that God will be who He is and do what He does, aside from how I have it figured out. My hope is that God will be who He is and do what he does. And I put it all there with him. Let me ease things a little bit here. We have a friend that was telling us about this person's father was in the hospital. Okay, an older guy. A believer. You know, a follower of Jesus. And was in, he had, I don't know what he had, you know, some kind of thing where he'd gone through some serious surgery and all this kind of went with this thing. And so the daughter was there trying to bring encouragement to him. And so she said, well, Dad, you just need to realize, you know, remember that Jesus is here. That's a good answer. I mean, a good statement, right? You know, in the midst of the situation, remember, Jesus is here. And her dad, you know, kind of got this strange look on his face and looked at her. And so what difference does that make? You know, how does that change anything? You know, it's kind of like, what are you bringing this up for? And if Jesus is not where you're looking at, if he's not the one you're looking to for your hope, if that's not where you have moved the center to, that question kind of makes sense. What does that have to do with anything? But if he is that person, then the fact that he is present in your situation changes everything. The dynamic of all changes because you're desiring for Jesus to be who he is and to do what he does without any demands on my part. Doesn't mean I don't express those to him, but I'm counting on something bigger than what I can even bring to him. Confidence is there. There's joy, there's confidence, and then there's longing also. There's longing in there. And this is really one of those features of hope that kind of sets it apart a bit. There's a longing that comes with it. That hope generates a yearning for something that is not yet. Something that has been offered to me, and I get tastes of it. I can hear it. I can kind of see it somewhere out there, but it's not here yet. There's a longing for it, for what has been promised. When Paul wrote to the Corinthian believers and was talking about how Jesus changes everything, one of the comments he makes to them, 1 Corinthians 15:19, it says, if we have hope for Christ in this life only, we are above all people to be pitied. If Jesus is only kind of our lucky charm to go through life, if it's only about somehow he's going to change things and we're going to live a better life, we're going to be better people, which he does say that we'll do that. But if that's all it is, Paul writes to them and says, we are to be pitied above all people. Because it's not centered on this life only. This is not all there is. This is not the big deal and that somehow, you know, live life to the fullest because this is all you got. Not it. We're playing to that bigger story, remember? There's a longing that builds inside us as we anticipate something that has not yet been given to us. Something that is promised and that we get tastes of. We get little glimmers of it because of following Jesus now. But God intentionally doesn't allow us to have all of it now because it's not about this. There is something bigger happening, a larger story that is unfolding, that's what we play to. There's a quote that is a fairly famous quote out there. I'm not going to give it to you because I'm going to change it, and I don't want you to be confused with the two. I want you to remember my version, not the other version. So my version of the quote is this. It has to do with the relationship between faith and hope. That is that faith is hearing the music from a distant land. Faith is hearing the music from a distant land. Hope is dancing to that music. By faith, you know, you're looking to Hebrews, and it talks about this, that faith is what actually fuels our hope. It's not the other way around. What we believe actually fuels the hope. Faith hears the music from a distant land. It hears all that God has for us and grasps a hold of that. But hope dances to the music. It actually enacts it for us. I love watching, your daughter's name up here?
Maddie.
I loved watching Maddie. You couldn't all see this up here. I had a front row seat. Okay. So as we're singing these songs, you and I, we're doing our controlled thing. You know, where it's kind of like, okay, yeah, Jesus is wonderful. I'm trying to think of the songs we sang, you know, as far as, but you don't want me to try to do those. I'm trying to create the counterpart, you know. But Maddie up here, she got it. You know, she's up here and she's just dancing away and swinging around and stuff like that. And I'm thinking, that's my soul. You don't see my outside, I'm doing this. Okay. I'm very controlled. You know, I've got it down. But I'm looking at her and going, you go, Maddie. You go, Maddie. Because that's what God desires from us. To hear the music and to dance to it. To have lives that stand out from those around us with joy and confidence and hope. Now, the key here, you know, to make this work, we have to think through again, how does that get enacted? It's one thing to talk about and say, these ought to be true. Yeah, well, yeah. But what makes them work? What's the trigger points for these that allow hope to truly emerge in our lives? So let me give you three. First of all, it's thinking about the truth. Now, with that, we kind of go back to Jeremiah that we talked about. And Jeremiah, in the midst of life that was the devastation of dreams that he's standing in front of and looking at his reality there, in the midst of that, he says, I recall to mind that which is true. After the will, I'm choosing to think differently. I call to mind that which is true. I recall is the word he uses there, which means to kind of reset, okay, to bring it back in and to reset again. Because if all I do is look at life and kind of see it playing out in front of me, and that's all I do with it, it can be kind of a disappointing life, you know, at least. But he says, I call to mind, I recall these things, that the things that I know are true. And in his case, he actually gives us the content of what he recalls to mind, which is the loving kindnesses of God, the hesedness of God. I recall these things to mind, these things that are true every single day and renewed every day. He says, I call this to mind, and therefore I have hope. This need inside us to rethink over and over again so that we have that other story, the alternate story, the one that God brings in, the bigger story, brought back to mind. And think through again to have the truth play out in our life. That self-talk that we talked about last week. It's kind of like sanctified self-talk. You know, where we're choosing to bring truth back and actually tell ourselves what is true, that this one story is not all there is. There's another story that plays alongside it. And to think through that, to have that be part of our process in it, you know, in a day and throughout a day. In the book of Hebrews 3:6, the author calls his readers to hold fast to our confession and the boast of our hope. That's an interesting way of putting that. To hold fast to our confession and the boast of our hope. Now, the confession, much of the letter of the Hebrews to the Hebrews builds that out. It's what we believe is true. It's what we're confessing to believe. It's the statement of our faith. This is what I believe. But he pairs it with this. And because he's a Hebrew author writing to Hebrews, the parallelism covers over each other. In other words, it's like a restatement, the second part of it. Our confession and the boast of our hope. I love that phrase. The boast of our hope. That we have something that is bigger than us. Something that captures us. Something that is really a boasting of something bigger. It's huge. The boast of our hope. hold fast to this, he says. Later in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 18, which is part of that text that I put up in front of you there, it has a similar statement there. It says, taking hold of the hope set before us. Grasping it. This idea that if I don't, it's going to slip through my fingers here, and I'll default to just what I see in front of me. But grabbing a hold of this, the hope set before us. Notice the terminology even. Not the hope that is present or past, something that is in front of us still, something that pulls us forward in life. A couple of questions to ask yourself, because I've been asking myself these things. They're kind of in-your-face kind of questions, I think. Probing questions. One is, where do you believe this story is going? The story that you're in. Where do you believe this story is going, honestly? Because obviously it's unfolding. It's going somewhere. Where do you believe it's going? And unless you ask yourself that question, there's a tendency to kind of almost avoid it. Where do you believe this story is going? And the question that goes along with that is, what are you counting on to be true? Where is it going? And what are you counting on to be true? Are you kind of counting on the idea that you're earning points with God? And my point level's up to here, and so I'm good? Are you counting on the idea that you're good enough? Are you counting on the idea that somehow it's just going to all work out? What are you counting on? Or are you counting on Jesus to be who he is and to do what he says, or do what he does? Are you counting on the gospel in all of its full proportions to be true and to play out? Are you counting on the idea that this is actually heading somewhere and all of this makes sense in the larger story? What are you counting on to be true? So the first of these things is the idea of thinking about the truth. But the second piece is one that kind of takes it a bit farther, and that is to think deeply about the truth. Not just think about the truth, but to think deeply about the truth. And the biblical term that gets dropped into there is the term meditation. Not meditation like Eastern meditation, or empty your mind and all this kind of stuff. Biblical meditation is the exact opposite of that. In biblical meditation, as you run through the scriptures, the idea of taking the truth of God's word and to stop and to think about it and to actually pair it with your own life. So it's like here's what God says, here's life as I'm experiencing it right now, how do these two pieces fit together? That's biblical meditation. And it takes enough time to actually envision it, to think through what does this mean, how am I going to play out my life, and that's where biblical meditation goes. So it's not just thinking about the truth, but thinking deeply about the truth. Allowing it to settle inside yourself and to have effect on how you think about your current experience and where it's going and how you're going to play out life. To think deeply about the truth. And then a third piece in it is not only to think about the truth and think deeply, but think expansively about the truth. Now, this is one that I want to... This could be the whole sermon, but I'm not going to do that. Okay. The idea is that I can only think about the truth I have. In other words, if I have a very thin understanding of what Scripture says, if I have a very thin understanding of what the gospel brings, if I have a very thin theology of who Jesus is and how he operates in our lives, if it's all thin, then that's going to define my hope because I don't have much to work with. I can put my mind on the truth, but I don't have a whole lot to work with there. I can try and think deeply about it, but I can, I can only dive in a pool that's deep, And in the scriptures here in Hebrews chapter 6, the author takes us to this place. If you back yourself up, if your scriptures are open there, Hebrews 6, verse 11. He makes this statement. It says, and we desire that each one of you show the same diligence so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end. Now, just prior to that, in the verse ahead of that, he's talked about the idea that we delight in the idea that you guys have gotten a hold of stuff here. You've got this work of ministry you're involved in, and you're loving each other, and you're doing all this great stuff. He said, I like that. But we want you to take that same diligence about doing ministry and plug it in here. And in order to get what he's talking about, you have to go all the way back to the beginning of this chapter, verse 1, where he says, therefore, leaving the elementary teaching about Christ. In other words, the basics. You just stepped into this thing. Jesus loves me. Okay, but taking ourselves beyond the elementary teachings about Christ, he says, let us press on to maturity. Let us press. Let's move deeper into this thing, pressing on to it. And that's where, in verse 11, he's picking that line of thinking up again, because he's developed it up to this point. He says, therefore, not only about doing the stuff of ministry, but let's press deeply into this relationship that we have with God because of our redemption. To think deeply about it, so that we have the full assurance of our hope. Not just thinking, not even thinking deeply, but thinking expansively about the truth of who God is and what He has done and what lies ahead of us. Now, I'm sure I'm out of time. I'm okay. I have 5 minutes? Okay. But I'm just going to leave you with this. In Romans 15, take a look at this one. Romans 15, verse 13. It's if I was going to leave you with a statement, this is the one I want to leave you with. Romans 15, verse 13. Paul offers this blessing to the believers in Rome. He says, now may the God of hope, it's almost like you have to pause at each point here. Now may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that you will abound in hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Now, capture each piece of that. First of all, may the God of hope. He's the source. Remember, the focus is not on the promises, it's on the promiser. It's on the one who is himself the great reward. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace, like we've talked about today, in believing. There's the hinge. That's our part in this thing. Telling ourselves the truth, thinking deeply about the truth, expanding that truth so that it becomes more rich and full, so that you will abound in hope wildly by the power of the Holy Spirit.